You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB the CV, copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
Did you see that Brian Kelly was overpaid $1 million?
Yes, I saw that.
I'd like to have that happen.
We'll begin there with the host of Nothing Personal, David Sampson. Follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson. I can't recall ever reading a story like this, that Brian Kelly was overpaid. It was discovered after an audit, and the university has moved to correct that. David, have you ever overpaid anybody outside of John Buck?
That's so funny. Did we tee that one up for you? I've overpaid so many people that it would make your heart sweat. But they always got what was under their contract. You know, you have something called the payroll department. And you know that the payroll department matches itself with the contracts and legal department. And payroll is not done until it's approved. And then you set it up. And then it's checked against what people are actually owed. So no, there has never been someone who has been overpaid or underpaid, except for salespeople, where you have to deal with commissions. And so when you're paying people commissions, you have to get the sales report, you have to get that approved and matched. And sometimes there's a cash flow difference between what you've brought in, and there's a difference of opinion between what should be paid out as a commission to your sales department. And that can lead to a disagreement between an employee and payroll. And always to the benefit of management, we'd never pay a commission on something that wasn't really totally earned, but there'd be an argument over what has been earned. But no, players, it's pretty easy, and coaches, pretty easy to do their payroll.
What's it like to be so rich that you don't realize you have gotten an extra $1 million, assuming he noticed or he didn't notice and hide it?
So you can't not notice. So the way it happens, now I say that given that there are players who don't know how much they get paid and they don't recognize what is in their bank account because they don't have access to their own bank account because they have agents who take care of it and give them living allowances and who spy everything. They don't even see their own credit card statement. So I've seen all that before. And believe me, those agents are not doing those players any favors at all. But that said, for your coaches, I have never seen it where a coach is not handling his or her own account. And when you have a paycheck, let's say you're getting 24 paychecks a year, an extra $1 million. So you're talking about an extra, let's just say $100,000 a month. I mean, for easy math, so $50,000 a paycheck. After tax, $25,000, you are going to notice a difference in your account.
Maybe he thought it was like a incentive that he earned because they beat Alabama. I don't know. Like, I can't fathom that many zeros and just being like, it looks good to me. I don't know.
The details surrounding it, just to help the audience, the details surrounding it say that it was a double payment, one issued to his LLC and one issued to him personally.
Oh, nice. I like to think they just kept paying him, right? Like the opposite of my man from Office Space.
With the stapler?
The stapler, yeah. Just like they kept paying them. Yeah.
So this just happened to me with a company who pays me money, and it shall remain nameless, but they double paid me. And it was obvious that there was a double pay because when you get a deposit that is in the same amount twice, you check it and you ask yourself why, and then you report it. Because eventually it's going to be found out. And if you pretend to have money that you don't and then spend money that you don't, that's a good way to go bankrupt or a good way to get your finances screwed up. So I am not buying for a minute that the coach did not know that he had the same exact deposits going into two entities. I'm just not buying it.
Also makes you look a little dishonest. But let's talk about the big local story down here, the franchise that you have ties to. Bruce Sherman has refuted reports out there that the Marlins are for sale. Typically, that means it's for sale when the numbers get out there. What do you think is happening here? And do you think he'll be able to recoup his investment?
So let can we read a quote? I talked about this on Nothing Personal, and I actually just want to explain, and I did a pretty long bit on it because he had a quote that was just fantastic the other day with the Marlins. And here's exactly what he said. Did you go through this on the show yet?
I don't believe we have.
With what he literally said? Okay. He said, the Miami Marlins are not for sale. They have not been for sale under my ownership, horse hockey, and will not be for sale in my lifetime. Boy, that seems like a little bit of hyperbole. Hard to know what your estate plan is, isn't it, Bruce? He had his PR people calling newspapers around the country, including where this came from in LA, trying to make sure that he was vociferously objecting to what was said. And then he ended his statement with, it is a privilege to own this great organization, and I look forward to seeing our loyal fans on opening day. Let me give you a background of Bruce Sherman. He's got about 15 or 16 partners who put money in order to buy the team in 2017. Those partners let Bruce Sherman and Derek Jeter run the team for the first 5 years because there was a promise of profitability and high payrolls. That promise has not actually happened. Therefore, Derek Jeter was removed from his position, and the limited partners, who were pretty silent, are now saying, don't ask me for any more money. I don't want to cover any more losses. And Bruce Sherman said, but wait a minute, we're losing money every year. We need more money. If someone came around, and believe me, questions have been asked. If someone came around and said, I will give you $1.2 billion plus all the money you've lost over the 5 years you've owned the team, Bruce Sherman's statement would be, it has been my utmost pleasure to steward this franchise through 5 years. I can only tell you that we did not have the success that I wish we had had, and I wish the Marlins nothing but the best in the future.
David,
you're damn right they're for sale.
David, let me ask you a question, and this, I know this, I'm asking you to enter someone else's mind, but looking at his tenure, do you think Bruce Sherman has fun owning the Marlins?
I love where your head's at. When Derek first started, I'll give you a Bruce Sherman story right now that is he can't deny, but believe me, you guys are going to get a call from Latimer. I hope you're ready for it. He's going to pick up the phone and he's going to say, I can't believe you have Samson on your show. He's spewing this bullshit. All right, Jason, tell me this didn't happen because you weren't in the meeting. Bruce Sherman made it very clear that he had given Derek Jeter the keys to the franchise. And when he was going through the due diligence and we were putting a team together of how this deal was going to happen, Bruce Sherman made it clear to me, hey, whatever Derek Jeter wants, he's going to do because he knows exactly what he's doing. And I have put my entire faith and trust in him because God, did I love him as a shortstop for the Yankees. You will not get a denial that's real from that statement, but that's exactly how it happened. And Derek Jeter's no fool. He knew exactly that he found a man who would use his money and pay Derek money to do what Derek always wanted, which was to be an owner of the team. And then Frankenstein's monster was born, and Derek Jeter didn't talk to Bruce Sherman. And that's how the divorce happened.
Wait. So he took the money and then he just like, I know, shut up. Just sit over there. I'll handle this. He didn't. What do you mean he didn't talk to him?
Bruce Sherman was not aware that Mike Hill was not coming back as general manager. Should we start with that?
How is that possible? Let's start with that. How is that possible?
The level of involvement of Bruce Sherman when Derek Jeter was there was, it makes de minimis look gigantic.
Is he involved now?
Yes, sir.
So, to the original question, will he recoup his investment?
Today? No chance, toilet pants. Believe me, they've asked. No one will bid $1.2 billion plus losses on the Marlins right now.
Isn't that also the case? Because the Los Angeles Angels were for sale and now they're not anymore. Is that a similar case where they're not going to get what Artie Moreno is asking for? And I guess that would lead me to a bigger question, which is, are baseball teams decreasing in value, or was there a bubble that, frankly, your sale of the Marlins caused?
Well, come on, that's inflammatory.
I'm not even saying
take a victory lap, man.
Right? Yeah, like be
I'm
happy.
A victory lap. I'm like, saying that I created a bubble.
No, but we talked
on creating a bubble in public-private financing. But here's the victory lap that is happening. Here's what's really happening with the Angels. Great question. Artie Moreno is definitely getting his money back for what he bought the Angels for. No question about that. He said that the team is no longer for sale because he owes it to the fans and the players and the sponsors, and he wants to bring a championship back to California. Totally ridiculous. What actually happened is that the price was not what he wanted. He is looking around at all of these transactions in other sports. He has seen even Man U, right? The Commanders. And he wants to get above $3 billion for sure, because he's not going to take a significant premium over what Steve Cohen bought the Mets for. He wants to set the record. Right now, there's no one, because, spoiler alert, Anaheim's not Los Angeles. And the whole Shohei Ohtani, what do we do with him? Because that impacts the value of the team. That is an absolute misdirection. Shohei Ohtani's presence on the team, either as a traded player or a signed player, has nothing to do with the bids on the Angels at all. It's about what's going on in the industry. It's about what's going on with the cable TV deals, with the regional networks, about whether or not player salaries without a cap are too big a percentage of industry revenue. That is why the value of teams is not increasing at the rate of other leagues. That's why the Nationals haven't been sold, nor the Orioles, nor the Marlins, nor the Angels, because they have not gotten the prices that the owners want.
So the decline of, I guess, the Bally Sports RSNs, I imagine, would play a big role. So basically, because baseball's biggest revenue source is sort of at peril right now, they have to sort that out until... If they want to reach these big valuations, because at this moment in time, like, you're not going to find big money billionaires that want to buy baseball teams when your biggest revenue source is sort of in doubt.
There's no question. It's the biggest story that nobody's talking about. Who's going to stand behind the Angels who get, let's just say, $150 million a year in TV money? That money all of a sudden disappears. Is MLB going to guarantee it? How quickly will their central fund disappear? All the money they've secreted away and taken from teams and not distributed, what, are they just going to start paying teams? Are they going to convert now to just streaming?
How do you think the Fox-Disney deal shook out when it comes to these RSNs? Did that acquisition by Disney in turn really hurt one of its bigger partners in Major League Baseball?
Did anyone know, when we were negotiating our TV deal in 2014, 15, 16, and 17, there had begun the decline, what was called cord cutters, the decline in cable subscribers. When we met in Century City on the Fox lot with all the people, including some of the people who just got hired by baseball to figure out what the hell to do, a guy named Billy Chambers, no one thought that it was going to be where it is today. Everyone thought there was going to be a decline, but thought that it would be a decline at a slower rate and would not bottom out where it has not bottomed out yet. It's lower than where they thought the bottom was.
How is that possible?
So you all meet at the Fox lot, and these are the smartest minds when it comes to this specific niche, and nobody saw this coming.
I didn't say that. We all, you can look at the graph, we all saw it coming.
This quickly. No one saw it coming this quickly.
I would also say, like, it's not even just the decline in cable. It's also the decline in the cable companies and now the MVPDs, which are the ones that distribute, like, YouTube TV, in not wanting the programming. Yes, like, I mean, ESPN still makes a ton of money from cable, and cable systems will not drop them, whereas it seems like there are some cable systems that are willing to drop the local RSNs.
Get ready for ESPN Plus is all I'll say. There's a reason why it's out there, because as much as we live in this bubble of sports where we think ESPN is the coolest thing ever, and we talk about things that we assume everybody knows about, here's a news alert, folks. People are tired of paying for ESPN who don't watch ESPN.
Do you think we'll eventually head towards what Apple is doing with MLS?
I think it's almost a guarantee that all broadcast deals are going to be streaming deals. It is going to be full a la carte. You want to watch a game, you buy the game. It's like watching a movie. You want to watch the old way? Give me $19.99. You can watch the old way. You don't have to have any sort of HBO Max. You don't have to have anything. Just watch the movie.
It's odd, David, because what's happened is now almost we're starting to see kind of a revival of people just wanting all their options in one place, right? We hit this point where like a la carte everything. Give me HBO Max by itself, Netflix by itself, Hulu by itself. And then people started going, well, I miss being able to just turn on my TV and know exactly where everything is.
Well, what's actually happening right now in the industry too is the rise of prominence of fast channels like Freevee and Pluto TV. Yeah. And
Tubi.
Yeah, and even Peacock has its own television interface. So you're kind of seeing cable come back in a way, yeah. Which is
but
kind
it's
of
premium
weird.
Cable. But it's like Hulu Live.
Yes, it's very weird. Like I don't know if you, like Roku, the Roku channel. I go
Roku channels are amazing.
They have a Mystery Science Theater channel. Yeah. Like it's just Mystery Science Theater all day long.
Yeah, if you miss the old MTV, you can basically just watch 80s music videos all day.
That's the whole point. That's the app. So now it's just apps. We're a world of apps. We're all used to downloading apps, and we all use different apps for different things. And everyone's trying to get a bigger percentage of the app market. That's just code for streaming. So my only point on the money side, and this is the same in basketball too, where their revenue is in jeopardy. The NFL is obviously completely excluded from this because it's all national. It's we're talking about local broadcast money here, not national. And there's no local broadcast revenue in the NFL, none to speak of.
Just preseason, and I guess that's
it's
radio. Oh, don't they get local
they get
radio?
Local radio.
Yeah.
Yes, but it's barely enough.
Relative to the national TV deals,
sure,
it's nothing.
Nothing. I mean, local channels do
Panthers
pay a
TV
premium to be the official
in Florida.
What's that?
It's the Panthers TV ratings in Florida.
Ouch. He didn't need to take
that.
Yeah, man.
That's what they would tell you. You want to get out of being a dash. Like with the Marlins, we just want it to be at a one. Just get me to a one. I need a period after a whole number.
Oh, my God.
People want to watch. The point is people want to watch what they want to watch, and they don't want to pay for things that other people are watching. And the way these broadcast deals got so big, just ask John Skipper about this. The way these businesses became so valuable is when other people are giving you money and you're not giving them something in return. It's the greatest business principle of all time. Pay me money for nothing.
Grift.
But do you think, David, that we'll eventually cross back the Rubicon of I'll pay for stuff that I don't want to watch because it still comes out to be cheaper than what I'm paying for the stuff that I do want to watch when unbundled?
They're just never going to let it get back to that point. I hear what you're saying, right? Everybody's adding up. Okay, I have Netflix. I have HBO Max. I have Showtime. What am I paying? Do I have the Disney bundle? Am I doing ESPN Plus? What about Peacock? Where do I find that Costner guy in Yellowstone? Oh, that's Paramount. All right, I got to do that. And then you keep a piece of paper and still people will consolidate because the streaming services are going to go through a consolidation, but it will not change the sports model and the way rights fees are paid to teams. That is forever different now. And that's why the commissioners are all trying to figure out streaming, including the NFL.
Curious to know if you're paying any attention to what's happening in the European transfer market, particularly what Todd Boehly is doing with Chelsea. And a lot of people are throwing their arms up, wondering if it's legal. And apparently he is taking advantage of financial fair play rules not being super restrictive. And he is signing players to longer contracts, and UEFA is already trying to step in and make sure there's a 5-year cap on stuff. But because he anticipates financial fair play rules becoming a little bit more rigid in the future, he is spending immense money. What's the stat that you were telling me, Woody, that he's basically that Chelsea have outspent entire leagues in Europe with some of their transfers?
I think their last two transfer windows, which is since he took over the team, it's a sum total of £500 million. Which is an astronomical amount of money. Like, I think it's the French league and the Bundesliga have not spent that amount total in those two periods.
I just did a full podcast on this yesterday.
Yeah, he's identifying a lot of younger talents that he projects higher ceilings to so he can keep them. Mudrik, he signed to an 8-year deal. These are young players, and I guess the idea is with their internal projections, they won't have to spend big money down the line. But this is a first-time owner of a European soccer team. He has experience with the LA Dodgers. This is a mighty big spend off the bat. It's inevitable that the wallets are going to tighten up down the line.
So let's just break it down for the audience. The Atlanta Braves take young players and they sign them before they need to be signed when they're still property of the Braves. They give them long-term deals, buying out their free agent years early. And you're going to get some of those right. You're going to get some of those wrong, but you've got cost certainty and you've got a core of players who you're going to have. Todd Boehly has never been the number one person in U.S. sports. He's been behind Mark Walters in Los Angeles and behind the Buss family with the Lakers, let's say. And now in Chelsea, he's the man holding up the jerseys. Let's not underestimate what sort of ego and how that plays. When there are press conferences announcing player trades or signings, when you see the money shot with the jersey, Todd Boehly is doing those. The reason why he is doing the long-term deals has to do with financial fair play. And he learned this in baseball, where all of the baseball players are being signed to these 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year deals because you get to amortize out what the hit is for your books. Even like you get to straight line amortize it, if you will. And what they're doing is they're going to change the rules on him. But you can't change the rules and do it ex post facto, only going forward, which means that he had an advantage over his competitors because he has 8-year deals and going forward, it's only going to be 5-year deals. So he saw a window to do something very American. And before that window closes, he's going to milk it and then he'll have to start operating like everybody else. But the question Chelsea fans ought to be asking is he actually listening to anybody or does he have new owner-itis where he just wants all the shiny new toys and he's hoping that that is what will make a good team? And, you know, I think they're 10th in the table right now.
Yeah.
So I would say that we got to wait to see.
It was a very messy summer transfer window. He seemed to defer to the Champions League winning manager and reports were early on. He knew he wasn't going to be the guy, but he still allowed him to shape the summer transfer strategy, saying no to Ronaldo because the manager didn't want him and targeting Aubameyang because the manager was familiar with him, but he had planned all along to replace him. It does seem a lot more organized and a lot more efficient in this winter transfer window. It's not something I've ever really seen before. So I'm kind of wondering aloud if it's smart. It seems smart by how you're describing it, someone seizing on an inefficiency and trying to make the most of it while it's here. But I have no previous results to lean on to know whether or not this is going to work out.
Well, you can't know. Isn't your definition of working out success on the pitch?
For Chelsea, it's different. For Chelsea, it's hardware.
Right. Well, when I say success, meaning trophies.
Yeah, top four.
Talk about a specific
playing in Champions
game.
League that helps pay four. For a lot of these transfers. If they're not in European competitions, all of a sudden that's a big hit to their books.
That's what I meant by wait to see, right? I'm not talking about relegation with them. I'm saying that it's going to be all based on where they are at the end, what they're hoisting. But in the meantime, he's an American owner joining other American owners there, acting like new American owners would act. He's doing everything according to plan, and who knows whether it works.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Lebatard. And finally, abstaining from food for 16 to 18 hours a day could be key to treating a variety of health conditions like stabilizing blood sugar levels and increasing resistance to stress.
Stugatz.
Mike, are you doing something like this right now?
I lost a lot of weight doing intermittent fasting and low carb, so now I'm getting back to it.
But how much in that 6 to 8 hour window, how much can you eat? Unlimited?
If I could just eat unlimited, I'd do that. That'd be fun.
For 6 to 8 hours.
You can't eat unlimited.
Try me.
No, I mean...
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugats.
Speaking of American owners in Europe, it was reported, not unlike the Artie Moreno stuff, that Fenway all of a sudden doesn't want to give up a controlling interest of Liverpool. Is this just trying to cultivate more interest in the market because the market wasn't what they hoped it would be?
Yeah, so whenever you see this, so we're seeing articles now about Man U, and it looks like that sale could happen in the next couple of weeks, and could it be $7 billion? You're looking at the Washington Commanders. How many groups are in at $6.5 to $7 billion for the Commanders team? You got Jerry Jones, who can then say, wow, my team's now worth $12 billion, but no, I'm never going to sell it. You start getting greedy. There was a time, and these numbers are totally different, but there was a time in 2000 and I would say 13 or 14, where if I had told Jeffrey that we could get $600 million for the Marlins, it would have been unheard of, a dream. You're telling me, David, you can find someone to pay $600? I said, no, but I'll start looking. And a few years later, I said, I can get you a buyer right now at $600. And he said, no, I want more. And I said, but wait a minute, you just wanted $600. You said we'd never get there. I got you there. You keep moving the goal line. And that's what happens. The goal line keeps moving, and then owners back out.
Are we running out of venture capital firms and extremely wealthy billionaires?
You've gone way too far.
Look at what happened with the Suns. A billionaire just bought it on a whim.
Who you never heard of.
Yeah.
By the way, the new Suns owner is going to close in his deal in the next 2 weeks, which is very fast.
$4 billion.
Close on a $4 billion deal like that.
And they don't get it, and they don't get the building. That's
wild to me.
That's incredible.
That's wild to me.
$4 billion and they don't get
the building.
If
I were targeting a European property, it might be Tottenham Hotspur because of the new building, the new facility, the NFL deal. It's more of a real estate deal. For the Suns owner to not get the building and pay that price is crazy to me.
Steve Cohen did not get the network and paid Fred and Jeff Wilpon $2.45 million without the network.
So Sarver keeps the building?
No.
It's a county building?
The county, yeah.
I mean, presumably there are contracts there, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, it's a good deal as far as like a lease and, the building is newly renovated. It's 2 years ago or something like that. And it's a magnificent facility. I'm just saying $4 billion and I don't get to say I own this building as well as,
a lot of these valuations for
the NBA team and the WNBA team.
A lot of these big valuations for these franchises, it's basically a real estate deal that's veiled as a sports deal.
Sports watching.
Oh, I actually think it's more of an ego premium deal. Do you know how many people had heard of that guy prior to him buying the Phoenix Suns?
Just Michigan State
alums, probably. Yeah, that's about it.
And now how many people are going
to
know him?
Everyone's going to know. He went to his first game the other night, sat courtside. Got a nice little ovation.
That's a good feeling.
Oh man, when you say
you get to be not Sarver.
Oh no, man. That's the real thing.
Don't even know his name. I know him as not Sarver. Way to go, not Sarver.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the building, not Sarver.
Yay! Remember when Jeter took over for me?
Welcome.
What did you all say? What was the one thing
not
you all
Samson.
Said?
When, not Samson. Yeah. Not Loria.
It's not Loria. 5 years later, are you all saying the same thing?
No. Now I know his name. That's the only difference.
So David, a point of, I guess, very small detail, but like, for example, on the subject of not owning your own arena or stadium, is there a point after you do a public private partnership where you could go, like, the Heat don't own their arena, and that doesn't really make much sense to me. Because I think it like holds them back from doing, from doing renovations, or like it was a whole kerfuffle as it relates the FTX thing. Like, wouldn't the Heat want to own their own arena?
I feel like that arena is already kind of falling behind too.
Because then you have to pay property tax.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless you're Madison Square Garden.
So you actually structure it so that you don't own it purposefully.
Really?
Is not on the hook.
But doesn't that allow you to fall behind though? With like, if you own your facility, you are more likely to improve it. Are you not?
Oh no, we're in charge. So it's even better. Actually, what you do is you negotiate a deal that is available. All you have to do is go to Google and read the documents. It's a fully negotiated deal with the public, and Miami's done it both with the Heat and with the Dolphins and with the Marlins, where the Heat and Marlins do not own their buildings, which means they don't pay property tax. but they get revenue from the arena. There is some sort of formula where you have to give the county back some revenue based on your bottom line results. And those results are always manufactured. So there is no money getting paid to the public. Wow. Then on top of that, when renovations have to happen, there's something called a capital reserve fund, and the public funds the capital reserve fund and the team. So the Marlins cut a deal where the Marlins and the county and the city fund a capital reserve fund for Marlins Park. But guess what? It's silent after 10 years, meaning after 10 years, the Marlins aren't responsible, the county's not responsible, and the city's not. And we're now at that 10-year period. Who's paying for the capital improvements at Marlins Park right now? There are backroom dealings going on because the public's about to put more money into the Marlins Park deal because it's their building. And the Marlins ownership can say, you don't want to keep the building up? No problem. That's a violation of the lease. We can get out of the lease and move. Yeah. It's what the Arizona Diamondbacks just did when there was not enough upkeep paid for by the public. They threatened to leave. So just you wait what's happening here in Miami. New deals are being cut. The Dolphins just cut a new deal where they get extra money for big time jewel events. The Heat cut a new deal where they get a bigger percentage of revenue of certain events and certain things. So all of this goes on behind closed doors.
David, if there are all these advantages to not owning buildings, then why do teams want to own buildings? Like the Warriors own Chase Center and the upcoming whatever, is it the whatever the
I guess,
the
but I guess these
arena
are
going to be.
Yeah, these are prime spots of real estate.
Yeah, is that
prime plots?
Dollars are fungible. I mean, because so if you like Joe Robbie built his own stadium, and so he owned Joe Robbie Stadium, and it was a big deal to the to Huizenga and then to Steve Ross what the size of their property tax bill was, and all of the gives by Miami to the Dolphins franchise have been directly related to how big the property tax bill is. Trying to find them a way to be more competitive with other football teams who are not paying property tax. So that is how a negotiation starts when you're at a competitive disadvantage. In terms of the ancillary development that you're seeing with these deals, keep in mind, let's look at our own Inter-Miami deal. Part of the way they're willing to build a private stadium. By the way, guys, I've not been there. Is that building being built now?
There was actually news on this front. Groundbreaking will happen sometime in April, and Mel Reeves was just informed they must cease operations and evacuate the premises on March 19th.
And so when is it going to open?
I mean, there are all sorts of kooky timelines, but Witty, what was the most recent timeline? Assuming that this March 19th thing is real.
They say they want to be ready by the start of the 25 season, but I mean, that's a fairly ambitious time. We've seen MLS teams start on the road and like they don't open their stadium until July, but I think even 2.5 years is ambitious, but that's what they say.
So when you're negotiating, you're seeing a lot of these as real estate deals, including with the Anaheim Angels. They just had a major thing where there were some bribes involved and issues about who is going to get the land, both under the stadium and around it. You see what the Braves did with their development. Why? Because it becomes non-baseball related revenue or non-basketball related revenue, and it doesn't go into the revenue sharing calculation or any sort of the shared revenue calculation that has to go toward payroll if you're in the NBA. So what's interesting to me, and I love watching it, is that these deals and these owners are doing real estate deals much more than stadium deals, and they're willing to own the stadium and pay property tax on the stadium because of the tax breaks they're getting elsewhere on the property. So to them, it's dollars out of one pocket into another. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know someone that was involved with the pursuit of Tottenham Hotspur. The club was ancillary to it. It was all about the real estate. It was all about that stadium and the NFL deal.
That's real.
David, just curious, another Inter-Miami note. It's been reported that Inter-Miami are negotiating with Lionel Messi, and part of the deal would be an ownership stake. Would you ever, if obviously there are different rules for Major League Baseball, but if this were allowed in your sport, would you ever consider percentage points of equity within a franchise to make up some of the cash up front that you wouldn't be able to compete with out of clubs with Europe and Qatari backing and Saudi backing?
Yeah, that's why it's not allowed, because of course I would do that. It's easy for me to give away points that I don't have, and it's easy for me to tell the owner, just give him a little schnook of
something. Yeah, with Jeffrey.
Yeah, he owned the whole team. I said, just do give Stanton, instead of having to pay Stanton $30 million in year five, let's give him, you know, 0.1% of the team. And then each year of his 10-year deal, we'll give him 0.1%. He'll end up with a 1% ownership stake. We can prove to him the team's going to be worth $1 billion. And all of a sudden, he's got himself $10 million. Whatever the case is, we can do the math and make it happen. I always would try to push money out, to defer money, to do anything, to have as many players as possible on your current roster to try to win and pay for it later. It's like using a credit card. You want the goods, but you want to pay for the goods as late as possible.
All right, let's talk about your review. Every week you review a movie or series or documentary. We talked a little bit about The Menu last week. Jess, you came around to actually watching this movie. You enjoyed it quite a bit, didn't you?
I thought it was hilarious. David, you said you were too anxious to laugh. I was laughing out loud throughout a lot of that movie.
Can you tell me what part you, when you say laugh out loud, that's not a smile.
There were more than one part. There was like at least 10 times I laughed out loud.
I'm asking for just one.
I don't want to spoil anything.
Let's just say taking photos of food while all sorts of things are going on.
There are so many funny. So I'll give an example without spoiling. They put up these slates with different menu items on it, and there's text on the screen that you read. And some of them were very funny, and I laughed during. Is that good enough for you? I don't want to spoil anything because we always get in trouble for spoiling shit on the show anyway. So
I think that's ridiculous that you get in trouble for that. The movie's been available for over a month. At what point can we not spoil the fact that Goose dies on Top Gun?
Still kind of new.
I feel like after the Academy Awards.
I got yelled at for revealing that Tony Soprano killed people.
Is that
ridiculous.
Did you actually get in trouble for that?
That's a gambit. Who did you get it? What egg?
Reddit.
Come on.
Well, so can we talk about a movie I watched yesterday, please?
What is that?
Because this is going to require a conversation.
What's the movie?
Because we can complain all we want about where we live and our government, et cetera. But I watched a documentary that was just nominated. So it's Academy Award season. The nominations came out on Tuesday. So what I do is I keep a full list. If you're looking on screen, I have a full list of all the nominations, all the movies that I need to see before March 12th. So I'm starting with the documentary features. So I watched a movie called Navalny. And I'm the first to admit that I did not know who Alexei Navalny was. What can I tell you? He is the person who, in theory, was running against Vladimir Putin in Russia. He's the person who got poisoned, in theory, by Vladimir Putin. And he's the person who may or may not be dead, may or may not have been elected, but you know he's not elected because, spoiler alert, Putin still runs Russia. They had cameras with him throughout the process that he went through, including being poisoned.
No.
The inside of mean, they were following him because he was a candidate. But it turns out that it wasn't just the documentary crew who was following Navalny. It turns out the Kremlin was also following him.
What's the rebranded KGB called?
The KRB or PCP or LSD or... Something like that. Yeah. But when you watch this movie, you are sitting there on the edge of your chair and you're realizing that this is not a movie. This happened in real life. It's not pretend CNN doing reports on this. It's the actual footage of CNN reporting on something that happened that must have happened while I was sleeping because I didn't know about it, hadn't read about it, which made me feel incredibly ignorant. But now I feel very informed. Navalny is the last name of a man who decided that he wanted to throw shade at Putin and explain to the people of Russia that they may be being lied to by their fearless leader. And let's just say that Putin did not take this very well. Free elections are not a thing in Russia. And for those who don't vote, you may want to watch this to realize why people died so you have the right to vote. It's called Navalny. Outstanding.
Is it graphic or gory at all?
No.
Okay.
Not
I'm going to watch it.
Where can I find it?
It is on HBO Max.
All right. I'm going to check that out. You mentioned that it was Academy Awards season. Any takeaways from the nominations? Top Gun Maverick got nominated for Best Picture. Let's go.
You think it has a chance?
No, but I'm happy it got nominated.
Yes. The win was it got nominated. And that was good. People thought that Tom Cruise would get nominated for Best Actor, but it's such a crowded field with Brendan Fraser. I just reviewed After Sun on Nothing Personal. Have any of you seen a movie called After Sun with Paul Mescal?
No, but I do love a good mescal.
So a good mezcal, there was a show called Normal People that he was in, if you've watched that on Hulu. Anyway, it's an interesting movie. He got nominated. And there was a something that happened this year in a movie called To Leslie, which I just reviewed on Nothing Personal as well, with Andrea Riseborough, who's nominated for Best Actress, who they didn't think would be. And they're all upset that it wasn't Viola Davis or the actress from Till. But there was this surge of internet support for Andrea Riseborough, who plays a lottery winning mother, alcoholic, who may or may not be able to live the rest of her life on her lottery winnings. Spoiler alert, she doesn't. And how that works. And it's based on a true story. And in a different world, she would win Best Actress. That's how good she was. But in this world, it's going to go to either Cate Blanchett or Michelle Yeoh. But it's a great performance, but it's changing Hollywood, because they didn't put any money behind this movie called To Leslie. No support at all, to no four-year consideration, no nothing. And she got nominated because people on the InterGoogle decided they were going to try to push her to the forefront for Academy voters, and it worked.
That's kind of crazy, right? Like, there's every year there's an argument about how whitewashed the Academy Awards are, and this is someone who was able to use their wealthy connections to get their movie nominated and seen by more people. I know that that's how every other movie also works. But like you said, this had like no marketing budget, no production budget. I've seen a lot of outrage over it.
Wait, the outrage is from the establishment, you're saying?
No, actually, it's from people who are like, well, I guess that's one way to do it. I mean, have you been following any of the Nepo baby discourse, David Samson? Because it's a very hot topic right now.
Nepotism?
Love it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, listen, Nepo babies.
I guess I would say this about nepotism, that I am absolutely a product of nepotism. I got my job because of nepotism, but I sure as hell didn't keep my job because of it.
Same.
So that is...
Wait, what?
Chris, I swear to God, Jeffrey would have fired me in a New York minute.
I mean, he did kind of fire you in a New York minute. You went over this. Yeah, he very quickly fired you, and you guys mended fences.
Yeah, so it's not, I mean, I hear you, but I don't know, Jessica, what you're talking about. Nepo baby? Are you saying there are actors like Andrea Riseborough shouldn't have been in that movie?
Well, I mean, the casting is part of it, I think. It's also like...
I miss out on Striptease because Demi changed it to a daughter instead of a son.
Damn.
To get her money in. To get her daughter in as a Freudian slip.
Nepo baby!
I mean, it's a tongue-in-cheek term, though. It's because Hollywood and media and entertainment is full of people who have, you know, family relations that help them get movies funded or nominated or produced.
Or just getting jobs. Look at you, Scott Kahn. How does he keep getting cast in these CBS shows?
You think it's just because of James Kahn?
I think certain actors have development deals.
Honoring the dead James Kahn?
Certain actors have development deals with networks, and that's why they keep going into failed pilots. Who's the dude from Hawaii Five-O or something like that? There was a dude that just kept getting CBS pilots.
Scott Kahn.
No, it's not Scott Kahn. But he may be one of these actors that has development deals with these networks that they guarantee them first
looks. Does Jason Reitman get shows just because of Ivan? Or Sofia Coppola? She did Lost in Translation because she's got the name Coppola. Nicolas Cage is Nicolas Coppola, by the way.
Yeah.
So is he a Nepo baby?
I mean, yeah, that it does give you.
It's
a,
not. It doesn't necessarily mean it's like you're the worst person on earth. It's just like, yeah, there's a lot of people in Hollywood. I'd say many, many, many people in Hollywood who get a chance to make something because of who they're related
to. Fair play
to
them. They're often talented, and they use their connections. And life's all about connections. It just means they got a leg up. There might be someone just as talented that isn't privy to the same kind of network, and their careers won't work out the same way.
They always work hard.
Know who the team doctor is for the Marlins, the team dentist? I'm going to give you a funny line.
I don't know who the team dentist for the Marlins is.
Dr. Sherman?
Dr. Ira Koch. Dr. Ira Koch has been replaced by a new Dr. Koch.
Ah, his son. Nice.
Is that nepotism? Do we view our teeth as mattering not as much because we're happy to have the son step in there?
Well, yes, if he got the job because his father like appointed it. But I'm not saying that that's the worst thing in the world, and we should all hate him for it, David. Like, it's not always a negative. It's just pointing out the obvious in Hollywood, which is like, it's easier to get a film made or a film nominated for awards if you're buddies with someone
if your last name is Coppola.
Yeah.
David, do you know how Jason Bateman got his first movie role? Do you know what it was and how he got it?
Isn't he Justine's brother from Family Ties?
Yeah. He is, but he was also a TV. He was on TV as well. But his first movie role in a time where the jump from TV to movies was very difficult, right? It was a movie called Teen Wolf 2. Teen Wolf 2. And do you know who the producer of Teen Wolf 2 was?
The producer of Family Ties?
No.
Ed Koch.
No. Kent Bateman. Kent Bateman produced this god-awful movie, which you can catch on Cinephobe, by the way, and cast his son, who had never done any movies, to be the lead role in it because they couldn't get Michael J. Fox. They went from Michael J. Fox to, at the time, you know, small TV star Jason Bateman.
Turns out he was right, wasn't he?
No,
it's not always like, we're not saying that that person's like a piece of shit.
Right.
That's how it works, though. And I think a lot of the criticism I've seen about this film is that the best actress nomination went to the lead in it and not Viola Davis, who was the star of a huge blockbuster film this summer, A Woman King. That's where I've seen a lot of the outrage over it. And it's very indicative of how Hollywood works on these networks and connections versus, you know, giving credit to people who do a really good job. But I'm sure Viola Davis also has a large network and a lot of connections. But when you have powerful people standing up for your film, that's how these things keep happening in Hollywood.
Well, I think that I'm a little different about the Academy Awards because there are so many worthy candidates. It's sort of like the awards for podcasts, right? There's so many good podcasts out there. How do you differentiate yourself? And there's marketing involved. There's luck involved. There's timing involved. And all of those things sort of conspire to get you nominated and then even to potentially get you to win. But that's the way it is everywhere. When people are submitting bids to paint your house, there's competition. You're not always choosing the lowest bid. You may be choosing a company who painted your friend's house. And that's just another form of connection or nepotism. And that to me is how the world of business works. You want to do business with people who have done business with people you know and have done it well. And if you think you can sell a movie without having to have a huge budget, I mean, Michelle Yeoh, think about what they did in Everything Everywhere All at Once. Michelle Yeoh is now nominated. The guy who's going to win Best Supporting Actor from The Goonies, who hadn't worked in 20 years, put him in a movie. He's going to be an Oscar winner. People weren't lining up to give these people jobs. And now they're nominated. And now they're going to be able to do great things going forward. It's just a lot of it is happenstance.
Shout out to my man from The Goonies. And Indiana Jones. Yeah.
David, thank you for joining us this week. We'll talk to you next week. Check out his podcast, Nothing Personal with David Sampson, and follow him on Twitter at David P. Sampson.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.